This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 local farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. And this month, Pine Melon is celebrating Earth Month by highlighting their commitment to sustainability. They keep their supply chain efficient to help reduce carbon emissions and offer same-day delivery to help reduce food waste. And as a special thanks to CityCast listeners, you can use the code CityCastDenver for $75 off your first order. That's Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered.
Today on CityCast Denver. It's the Friday before Halloween, and we're sharing our favorite scary Colorado stories. We've got a true crime murder, a classic haunting, and a ghost story I guarantee you've never heard before. Plus, we talk about the best local haunted house attractions that you can check out for yourself this weekend. If you dare. Today is Friday, October 28th, 2022. I'm Bree Davies, and this is CityCast Denver. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city where even Jesus wants to come watch Nikola Jokic. Thad, did you see the Nuggets game last night? Apparently there was a guy dressed as Jesus there.
No, I haven't, but Tia saw Jokic hit the store the other day.
Your Tia did?
Mm-hmm.
Which King Supers does he shop at?
Oh, I don't know if I should say that.
Oh, I know which one Tia works at.
It's a fancier one.
Okay. It's like South Denver.
Perhaps.
He'll okay. Neither confirm nor deny.
No.
That.
But she said he was super nice.
I'll just Facebook Tia and ask her.
She will tell you.
So I'm here today with my friend, Thad Mile. Thad, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So Thad is a co-curator of Understudy, which is a gallery here in Denver that not only showcases local artists, but helps fund their dreams, basically. Can you explain just a little bit about what Understudy does, Thad?
Sure. Understudy is a program that's a subsidiary of a nonprofit called the Denver Theater District. And what we do is we take 15% of ad sales from the digital screens downtown that you see.
So those big screens with ads on them.
Yeah. So we also have some traditional static billboards too, but 15% of all the revenue that goes to those boards, we're able to spend on public art. So we can do whatever we want with that money as long as it goes back to public art that's free for the people. And so Understudy is one of those programs.
That's awesome. But that's not why I have you here today. We're going to be talking about haunted houses. Before we go there, I've got newsletter editor Peyton Garcia.
Hi, guys.
And producer Erin O'Toole.
Hello.
So we're talking spooky stuff. I want to hear everybody's best spooky stories. Peyton, I'm going to start with you. You're going to share a local scary story with us.
Yeah, so my tale's about murder. It's a sunny February morning, 1960, and a milkman is on his way to the Golden Morrison area for his rounds. He comes upon a bridge that he has to cross, and there's a van blocking it. He lays on the horn. The van doesn't move. He gets out to inspect it. He sees that the engine is running and the radio is on. But there's nobody there. So he waits a little while, keeps honking the horn. Nobody comes. He calls the cops. The cops come. They check it out. They're able to confirm that the van belongs to one Adolph Coors III, meaning the Adolph Coors, chairman of Coors Brewing, and grandson of Adolph Coors I, who founded Coors Brewing. He lives on a ranch nearby in Morrison with his wife Mary and his four kids. They confirm that he never showed up for work, and then the police start processing what appears to be a crime scene. They find a little bit of blood spatter on the bridge and a hat and a pair of eyeglasses that they can also confirm belong to Adolph Coors. So a search ensues, one of the largest of the time. They've got men on horses, they've got people on foot, they've got people in cars. They spend the whole rest of the night looking for Adolph. Can't find him. The next day, Mary, Adolph's wife, receives a ransom note. It's written on a typewriter. And it's promising Adolph's safe return in exchange for $500,000 in cash. She needs to pull out the money and then put an ad in the Denver Post for a John Deere tractor. That's how the kidnappers are going to know that she has the money and she's ready to make the exchange. They pull out the money, they put in the ad, and nothing happens. They never hear from the kidnapper again. So, over the next couple of days, local authorities start doing some good old-fashioned police work. They do a ton of cool stuff with forensic technology that I won't get into right now, but y'all can look it up. It's really cool. Anyways, all the clues end up pointing to this guy named Walter Osborne, who's been living in a Capitol Hill apartment for the last 4.5 years. They find out that Walter Osborne's an alias. His real name is Joseph Corbett Jr., and he's a fugitive. He's put on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, the largest manhunt in history at that time then ensues. They're searching everywhere for this guy, but the whole summer goes by. 8 months go by, and they find nothing on Adolf, and they find nothing on Joseph Corbett Jr. Until September, some hikers are hiking up near Pike's Peak. They find some tattered clothes that match the description of what Adolf had been last seen in. They call the police. The police do a search, and they do indeed find the skeletal remains of Adolf Kors. So, whether this, I think that, I don't know if this just renewed interest or if the timing was coincidental, but the following month in October, the FBI leads that the FBI has takes them to Canada. And they follow leads all across Toronto and Vancouver until they zero in on a hotel where they know Joseph Corbett is staying. They approach the hotel, they knock, reports say that he came out and he said, "I give up, I'm your man, I did it." He pleads not guilty. He spends the rest of his life saying he had nothing to do with this. Here's the sad part, though. I mean, it's all really sad.
It's
all really sad. But police have enough evidence to paint a picture of what actually happened to Adolf Kors the day he went missing. And what happened is that Joseph Corbett had been like tailing Adolf Kors for a while. This was totally premeditated. He had plans to kidnap, you know, this super wealthy, important guy and hold him for ransom. He had even been telling his coworkers that he was going to come into a lot of money soon. And so he'd been telling him his plan was to go and block that bridge with his car, pretend like he was having car trouble. But Adolf Kors is a big dude. He's 6'2", and he fights back. And I don't think Joseph Corbett was anticipating that. So he fights back. He gets away from him because Joseph Corbett tries to beat him up and put him in his car. And then as Adolf is running back to his car, Corbett panics, pulls out a gun, shoots him twice, and he's dead. So he was dead the entire time. He was never alive. The ransom never meant anything. He was just, it was a kidnapping that got totally botched. It's a true crime. I mean, there's no haunting involved. I don't think that Adolf like haunts Coors Brewing or anything. But I love true crime, and I found it to be an incredibly fascinating story. And a lot of people that I've mentioned it to didn't even realize that it was a thing, at least in my generation.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it before you talked about it.
Yeah, didn't know that. And I have to say, I read the book by Philip Jett. It's called Death of an Heir, The Murder of Adolf Kors or something like that. We can link to it in the show notes. But Philip Jett does an incredible job. It came out last year, and he does a really, really awesome job covering the whole story. It's really fascinating.
Erin, you have something spooky for us. We've done true crime.
Yeah.
Now we'll do spooky.
I think this is a story that a lot of people who've lived in Denver for a while do know about. It was new to me, and that is the story of what lies beneath Cheeseman Park. So, Bree, Thad, Peyton, you already know that it was once Prospect Hill Cemetery.
Right.
Okay. Well, I just dug in a little bit, and kudos to the Denver Public Library. Their archives are amazing.
Yes.
to find out what was going on. So the first body was buried there in 1859. Rumor has it was a murderer thrown into the same grave as his murder victim.
What?
Who was also his brother.
Oh.
Gosh.
That may be just for effect. I don't know if that's true
or
not.
It seems pretty sensational. I like it.
I'm going to choose to believe it. So, long story short, in 1872, there's some, you know, finagling over who owns the land. Mm. Basically, the U.S. government deeds it to the city of Denver. It's renamed the Denver City Cemetery for a while. So, but we still remember it as Prospect Hill because that's a better name.
Yeah, it sounds cooler.
Just sounds like a much better place to
be buried.
Yeah, exactly. So time goes on, years go by, Denver is growing so fast, and there are other cemeteries that start opening up, and they're better. They have water, so you can have trees, and it looks beautiful. And Mount Prospect starts dying off. It becomes an eyesore. And eventually people start pleading, can we please turn this into a park?
Also, think about the location. It's right in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. I bet people didn't want to live near that.
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of real estate developers in particular are like, this is gross. This is an eyesore. Can we please turn it into a park? So a Colorado state senator named Henry Moore Teller had to actually go to Congress and ask them, can we please make it a park? They granted that authorization, and in 1890, that's when it happened, and that's why the area around it is named Congress Park.
Oh.
Okay, so all that is to say, here's where it gets really weird. Mm-hmm. After they designate this cemetery as a park, families were given 90 days to go in and get the bodies of their loved ones, take them out, and rebury them elsewhere. As you can imagine, families who were well off could totally do that, but there were a lot of people basically buried in mass graves who did not have the means.
Yeah, especially with like a Potter's Field where like people are maybe don't have any family or family doesn't know they're buried there.
So a couple years go by, there's still maybe 2,000 to 5,000 bodies still there.
Oh, dang.
And so in 1893, that's when the city said, all right, we got to do something. So they call this undertaker, E.P. McGovern. And they're like, look, we will give you a contract. We're going to pay you per coffin to go get these bodies out and rebury them somewhere else. So I think it was $1.90 per coffin. So he kind of starts the work. It's not really going well. And then he gets greedy and he figures out, you know what? I'm going to get child-sized coffins and I'm going to hack apart these bodies. So instead of one coffin, I can sell three.
What a grift.
I'm going to triple my money.
What a disgusting grift.
Some might say entrepreneurial. Anywho, it was a mess. I mean, there were body parts and bones strewn everywhere by some historians' accounts. There were people just going every day to look and see what was going on. People were helping themselves to what was in the caskets, people buried with jewelry, keepsakes and things like that. So after a little while, the mayor cancels the contract. They actually, I think, bring McGovern up on charges. So a couple years later, the city builds a temporary fence around the park, and then they start leveling in preparation for the park, but they never move the bodies. So that's why Cheeseman Park is absolutely a beautiful place. It just...
It's had some real tragic stuff happen there.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I get these overwhelming feelings of dread and sadness when I'm there, and if that's ever happened to you...
Now you know why.
And to this day, when they do any sort of construction, from time to time, they still uncover remains.
You're absolutely right. In 2010, they were working on something like a sprinkler or irrigation system, and they unearthed 4 preserved skeletons.
No!
That's so crazy.
Gross! Yeah. Oh. Apparently, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of bodies that are still there, buried in Cheeseman Park.
Restless souls, for sure.
And it also happens in the neighborhood around it. So sure. Some of the homes there, they're just straight up haunted.
So a fun thing you can do in the spring, if you go visit Cheeseman right when the grass is starting to turn green, you can see the plots, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like that you describe that as something fun to do in the spring, but I'm about it.
It's interesting, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
You can actually picture the cemetery.
So have you ever had an experience like that in Cheeseman Park?
Not in Cheeseman Park, but I did live in Cap Hill for a while, and I did have a haunted experience the building I lived in. That was the haunted ghost story that I brought to the table.
It's his own haunted.
My very own personal one, yes. If you want, I can...
Go for it.
I can tell it to
yep,
you.
Okay. Yep, go for it.
So I lived on 14th and Pennsylvania, which is right across the street from the Salvation Army headquarters. But the Acacia at one point was a very fancy hotel where the mayors would put their mistresses up or that, you know, that kind of thing. One of the turn of the century mayors had a mistress, stayed up there, and she decided she would give him an ultimatum, me or your wife. And he chose his wife. So on the night of his inauguration, she took her life in the Acacia.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so I didn't know any of this, but I lived there as a college kid. And one night I was sleeping on my couch, and the way that the couch is situated, you can kind of see the front door. And I woke up from this nap, and the front door was open, and there was a woman out in the hallway, kind of like wandering around, not paying attention to me. But as soon as I sat up, she noticed me and kind of looked at me really angrily and then just started charging at me. So I got really scared, and I jumped up and I slammed the door. And like as soon as I slammed it, she reached the door and started pounding on it. And I was just so scared. And I don't know if anybody has ever experienced like a terrifying experience, like straight from waking up, but you're kind of in disbelief. Like,
yeah.
Is this happening?
Yeah.
I don't know. So all I did was I just went into my room and went back to bed. And then I woke up the next morning and I was like, whoa, did that really happen? Like, that was really strange. And I started doing a little bit of research, and there's a lot of like haunted Denver books and that kind of thing and websites. And sure enough, I found the story about the mistress. Like, putting it all back together in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that she was kind of dressed like fancy, but like not modern. You do like all the things that someone who tells you a ghost story, you're like, oh, was she kind of see-through? Did she have legs? I don't know.
Did she run? Did she glide?
Was she floating? The other thing they said, though, that kind of took me out of this whole thing, I'm always skeptical. I don't know if I'm like a true believer, but I do have firsthand experiences. They said that sometimes blood comes out of the faucets. And I was like, well, red water comes out of the faucets, but it's like rust. It's like rusty water. It's not.
That's what
sure?
they want you to think.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our love for haunted houses.
This episode is brought to you by the Museum of Outdoor Arts. Because on Sunday, April 28th, the museum is hosting La Primavera Festival, a celebration of spring, to kick off event season at Marjorie Park. La Primavera Festival is a family-friendly event inspired in part by the Gaelic Bealtaine celebration and European May Day, marking the beginning of summer. And the star of the show is really something special. They're premiering the latest permanent installation by local artist Lonnie Hansen. It's called The Cabinet of Curiosities and Impossibilities. Hansen describes it as an enchanting homage to English curio shops, featuring a collection of relics from fairy tales and nursery rhymes that tell stories about early optics, geometry, magical tools, celestial wonders, and more. The festival includes a pancake brunch, live Celtic music, maypole dancing, flower crown and basket making, yard games, and a bar for adult beverages. Tickets are available now at moaonline.org. That's moaonline.org.
And we're back, and we're talking scary stuff, scary stories, hauntings, and I wanted to talk about haunted houses. That's the big reason I wanted to bring you on today, Thad, because I know that you love haunted houses.
I love haunted houses.
Why do you love them?
Being scared. I feel like it's one of the few authentic emotions that you can't easily buy.
You can.
Can we clarify, you're talking like the costumed haunted houses?
Like the
attraction.
The attraction of the haunted house.
Where the clowns chase you with the chainsaws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes. There's what's that tone you got?
I know,
there?
I was like, the way Peyton's saying that, I feel like she like me, does not like haunted houses.
Haunted houses. The funny thing is I love real haunted stuff. Like, I'll go, you tell me something's haunted, oh, for sure. You tell me my apartment's haunted, I'm not leaving, I'm renewing my lease. Yeah. I think that stuff's cool. The fake haunted houses, I don't know. I think my mom took me too young. I have a very, very distinct memory, my whole family remembers it, of them taking me to a haunted house, and I just sobbed the whole time, like, it's terrible. Well, you want to see a grown woman cry. Like,
you have a friend in Bree, because Bree hates haunted houses too.
No, I'm not doing that.
Okay, but the one time we went, we even got, so there's this group called Colorado Movie Cars, and this gentleman, Kevin, owned the Ghostbusters.
The Ecto, like, van.
The Ecto van?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Wow. He like had a what was it? Like a Chrysler?
Oh.
He was a newer car.
It looked
car,
like a hearse though.
But he made it, he made it look like the Ecto van.
And it was tricked out though. It had laser beams. It had fog machines. It had a intercom system that you could talk to people. It had speakers. So
it was insane.
Music.
And I got this offer from him. He was like, I do this Colorado Movie Cars tour where I take people to all these different haunted houses, and you get VIP, you get to pull up, I play the Ghostbusters theme, you get out, you walk to the front of the line, cool. You cut everybody off. I was like, cool, I know a bunch of people that want to go on that, and I will sit in the car with you at every stop.
Yeah.
And that's what you did.
You didn't go through one?
Not a single
house.
One. It was that, my husband Greg, and our friend Casey, and like they had the time of their lives, and I just sat in the car all
the
night
amount
with
of times
Kevin.
My FOMO has been like, I'll go with you guys, but I'm just going to sit outside for the half hour you're in there. Have fun.
I'm like, I want to go hang out. Yeah. I just don't want to go in the haunted house.
Okay, but that, tell us about haunted house. You're the expert here.
Okay, yes. So based on my research, I think haunted houses originated in England in 1910, 1915. And they were like an offshoot of kind of the carny, seance, spiritualist kind of movement that was happening.
That makes total sense for that time.
Yes. Yeah. So as those became... They started as side shows. As they became more popular, they became their own shows, and that's where you get the haunted house attraction.
Okay.
So, American haunted houses, though, didn't first appear until the Great Depression, which is also the same time that we got trick-or-treating, going door-to-door asking for food. So those kind of go hand in hand.
That's really sad.
That is sad.
Yeah. I had no idea.
I didn't either.
I didn't know that either.
Oh. Very cool. I mean, not cool, but like interesting.
Interesting to know.
Yeah, so... after that, obviously, it was really popular, and through the 80s and 90s, it really exploded, and that leads us to today. I mean, there's a lot more other steps, but for the purposes of our conversation today, there's like really four categories of professional haunted houses.
Okay.
So you have the Mega Haunt, which are Six Flags, Brutal Planet. They have franchises across the country.
Like 13th Floor, is that one?
13th Floor, I would say, is probably the next step down, which would be a professional haunt. So
I'll stop guessing.
No, I think that's a good guess, because there's a couple that are in between, which I'll get to in a second. But 13th Floor, I would consider a professional haunt. There's one location. It's kind of like a staple, but it's predictable. Like you said, there's the chainsaw guy. There's that kind of stuff. It's very cookie cutter. It's really cool, though. I don't want to talk down about those kind of things. They serve a purpose. Then you have the charity haunt, which was actually how the early haunted houses gained popularity. They were like charities for churches and stuff.
For churches, though.
Yeah. I remember going to church haunted houses.
Hell House.
Nope, separate from Hell House. Okay. We'll talk about Hell House.
Yeah, Hell House we'll put on the table for later. But there's a charity haunted house going on in Central Park neighborhood right now. It's a couple that's, they created a haunted house in their...
Oh, in their garage.
In their garage and backyard. And they give all that money to charity. So that's a good example of a charity haunted house.
Okay. And then what's the last one?
My favorite, the DIY haunted house.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. You're speaking my language, because when I was a kid, my cousin and I were about the same age. We loved haunted houses. We were obsessed. And we would make one in our garage. But all it was just a really dark space and bowls of cooked spaghetti, and we'd make our parents stick your hand in this, it's worms.
That's, to me, those are the best kind of haunted houses, because they're very original and unique. You don't know what to expect. And also on the other side of things, it sparks a lifelong interest in Halloween in most people. Like you get
a lifelong fear.
I know. I was like, terrifying.
Or it scars you for the rest of your life. Thanks, Mom.
So speaking of that style, I know there's one here in Denver that you love for that reason, like a DIY style haunted house, but it's like kind of next level. Like you buy tickets and stuff.
I can't remember if I've taken you to that and you sat in the parking lot.
No, I've just heard from Greg about it. The junkyard?
The junkyard, the haunted junkyard.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Yes.
So when you say DIY, you're saying it's just like a regular person who makes this like in a space that they have.
This family does it in their junkyard.
Okay. Yeah. Do they have actors? Because I know a lot of, you know.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so I don't want to spoil it too much, but the Honda Junkyard does have actors. They're really good. It kind of has this like sense of danger that is like real, you know, because you're in a junkyard. So there's sharp things, there's trip hazards, there's... people with cattle prods, like real cattle prods, because I don't know if like...
What?
You know, they're doing it themselves, so I don't know that they know that you can get a cattle prod that
do
looks real, but isn't real.
Do you sign a waiver to go into this?
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes, you do. So the junkyard is one.
Junkyard's super cool. There's been a few in the past. They kind of come and go. There was one that was... I was trying to find the name, but in 2011, I went to one that was... it had a lot of splash effects. So you'd get a poncho... And these things would like squirt vomit or blood or colored water at you and stuff like that. That one was on like 14th and Tremont, but I couldn't for the life of me. It had like no online presence at the time, so I don't know what the name
They're kind
was.
Of fly-by-night operations sometimes.
A lot of them are only like one season. Yeah.
Okay.
I went to another one that was called... It was at where City Hall is now on South Broadway.
Oh, the venue, the Temple?
I
think it's Temple Nightclub?
Yeah, Temple now. So before that, it was just like a raw space, and it was like an adult-oriented haunted house where... You know, actors were topless and they could cuss and that kind of thing. So
there's quite a wide variety of haunted houses.
Yes.
Are there anyone, is there another one that you would recommend this year that folks could go to?
Yeah, actually. So aside from the Haunted Junkyard, I would recommend that one in the DIY category. But a good professional haunt that I just went to the other night was The Ritual, which is in Inglewood, and it's in a former Country Harvest Buffet.
Oh, that's right.
Which is scary.
In itself.
In itself.
But it was good. It was scary.
Good. It was really good. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the other thing I like about haunted houses. You know, they and I think you might be able to commiserate with me on this, is they take these
old
dilapidated strip mall things and breathe life into them.
I actually worked in a haunted house when I was in high school. That was in the old Tiffany Plaza Mall. When it was sort of like dead mall. I played David Bowie from The Labyrinth, which I've actually never seen.
Wait, was it Alien Terror?
I don't know. It was a small operation. I don't know how I got this. Someone I knew worked there, and I was like 15, and they were like, we need somebody to dress as David Bowie and wander around this room with a strobe light. And I was like, okay.
Cool.
It wasn't scary. So
you got the eyebrows and everything.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Can I do one more?
Yep.
If you're looking for... So, Peyton, this is one that I think kind of transcends. It started as a professional haunt, but has since grown to be... A mega haunt is the Frightmare Compound.
What's that?
So actually, I'm surprised we haven't talked about this sooner, because they are like
local
treasures, but also I feel like they have national recognition in the haunt scene as well.
For being that good.
Where is it?
That's how good they are. Up in Thornton, Westminster.
Yeah.
So they
wait, is it a house or is it a cornfield?
It's both. So it was a family-operated business that started in 1983. The father started it. And it's since passed on to the son, but it was their property. They live there. They still live there. So there's a house. But built onto the property are three separate attractions. There's a maze. There's a burial simulation ride where you get buried alive. I don't want to do that one. And then there's, of course, the original Frightmare Haunted House. One of the best ones, not only in Denver, but in the country.
I think that's the one my mom took me to that...
Yeah, that
scared you for life?
That scared me for life.
It probably was.
Yeah, because my sister used to go to that one every single year. She loved that one. And my mom took me when I was like, I don't know, like 9. And it was horrible.
It's
Were you
so
her first
good.
Kid?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, maybe that's what it was. But no, Tara was just doing what
she
wanted to
do. No, she was just doing what
it
she
really,
wanted.
That family, it really is their passion. You can tell. They put a lot into it. Every year there's new stuff. It's rearranged. It's super thoughtful. So check that
out. The Frightmare Compound?
Yeah.
It's time for our official CityCast Denver maybe for your weekend, as in maybe you'll see us there. Because as usual, there are so many cool things happening in Denver this weekend, and we have opinions about them. Peyton, you round up your best bets in our newsletter every Friday. Hey, Denver, you give us great ideas, but let's go through a couple of those and we'll gauge how all of us feel about them.
Yeah. So check out the newsletter for a full list of Halloween weekend activities. I kept it very spirited this week. Lots of great stuff in there, but I've picked out a couple that sound particularly interesting to me. So the first one is Muertos in Westwood. It's a 2-day event, and it's hosted by Rise Westwood and all of those awesome local businesses that host those cultural events like Cultura Chocolate and stuff like that. So it's happening tonight and tomorrow. And this one is, their focus is less Halloween, but it's celebrating the heritage of Day of the Dead.
Cool.
And there's a lot of really, like they'll do like traditional cultural performances. There's going to be crafts and authentic demos, and it's family friendly. There's going to be food and... it's free to attend. So that's tonight and tomorrow. And it sounds really, really cool, especially if you're not looking for something super Halloween-y, but a little bit more authentic.
Dad, are you going to that? That's in our neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure. I'll go to anything that Westwood puts on.
I was like, that also helps produce the Westwood Chili Fest, so maybe he's a little biased.
Yeah.
Oh, they do such cool stuff there.
Yeah, they do great stuff.
Next one. McGregor Square is hosting an epic Halloween party that's going to include a silent disco. I love me a silent disco.
You do?
And I didn't know that.
That is I love a silent disco. That's happening tonight on their heated plaza and food court. And you're supposed to come dressed up in costume. costume. It's a 21 over event. It's from 8 to 11 p.m. There's going to be three DJs operating the silent disco. There's going to be, tickets are $50, but it gets you food and drinks, and basically the whole experience. And it's going to be decked out in decorations, and it's supposed to be a really cool party. So if you're looking for something a little bit more party and you want to drink and dance, this sounds like a blast.
And wear costumes.
Yes.
Hell, and there's going to be a costume contest. It's called the Graveyard Groove Silent Disco.
Thank you, Bree. Yes.
I was trying to say they don't have the DJs listed, Thad.
Oh, is that what was going to change your mind about going?
It might DJs? Be people we know. Aaron Stereo does a lot of those. Okay. Tempting. What else we got?
Okay. Next, we've got the Marijuana Mansion Tour. So I think a lot of you guys probably already know that the Marijuana Mansion, which is in Cap Hill off of Grant Street, it is notoriously haunted.
Yeah.
Right now it is. Yeah. So there's like, it's supposed to like have like real spirits and
like
stuff in it.
Spooky apparitions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's supposed to be like really haunted.
You see ghosts in the weed smoke.
But now it operates as like, it's kind of like not a selfie museum, but they like kind of do these events where it's like super decked out and you can go and you can like rent it out and then like smoke a bunch of weed and take cool Instagram photos. Anyways, they're doing a haunted tour. So they've been doing it for a few weeks now, but this is your last chance. This is the last weekend. They'll stop on Halloween and you can book out either a 30-minute tour or a 1-hour tour, and you explore 3 floors and 13 rooms of the mansion that are decked out with quote unquote Insta photo opportunities. So if you're looking for something that's supposed to be like, that you want to like real spook factor, that could be cool.
Yeah.
I'd be skeptical that most of the people going to take their pictures in there are really interested in ghost stories.
I know. Maybe. Yeah. They say that it's just the Insta factor is just a plus, but that the real scary stories, there's, you know.
I know there are crowds of people though who really, they dig the haunted aspect
of
it. They go around the country to different haunted places, so I could see that.
So that's the tickets range from $30 to $45, depending on if you want a 30-minute tour or an hour-long tour.
Would you go there, Thad?
I'm going to pass on that one. The authentic haunting element is attractive to me, but the Instagram thing is not.
Yeah, I feel you.
But to each their own. I'm sure other people like that stuff.
What if, though, you go and you're doing the whole selfie thing and then a ghost shows up right next to you?
That would be pretty sick.
I like that. I like where your head's at, Aaron. Okay, so the last event we have was actually not picked by me, but it was thrown in by producer Lizzie Goldsmith. You guys have heard her on a few times. She's our theater expert.
I was like, this is a theater event.
So she wrote in to let us know that Much Ado About Nothing is happening at Denver Center for Performing Arts. They do wear costumes.
Because so there's they the are on stage it in
looks,
the theater?
Yeah, it looks like the show's running through November 6th. Tickets start at $25 and go up to about $90. I don't know anything about Much Ado About Nothing, but I will read what the note Lizzie gave me, which is, I suggest DCPA's Much Ado About Nothing. Fantastic Shakespeare comedy in its final 2 weekends. Kind of want to see it again, even though I'm not that into Shakespeare. The circular space definitely had a Globe Theater feel, and the ways they involved the audience were hilarious.
Okay.
So there's something family-friendly and not super scary.
I love me some theater. I'm going to say yes to this one.
Oh, God. Of course you do. I'm Muertos in Westwood. That's my vote is...
I think I'm Westwood, too.
I'm Muertos in Westwood, too.
We're trying to come to a consensus then.
And we will stay here all day until... Well, I'm just kidding.
Can people like hop from one party to another? Can I pick two? I'm going to pick two. I'm starting in Westwood. I'm ending at DPCA. DCPA.
I mean, for the official city cast, maybe. I think it's Muertos in Westwood. I think that sounds so cool, so fun. And then, like that said, if you have time, even though it's against the rules, I might stop by the silent disco.
Oh yeah, that'd be a better cap off of the night.
So there you have it. There's our city cast maybe of the weekend, as in maybe you'll see us there.
And I just want to plug our newsletter, Hey Denver, which you can subscribe to by texting Denver to 66866, and then you get all of Peyton's recommendations for the whole weekend, which is even more fun things
and
to
I
do.
And I jam packed it
you
this
do.
Friday.
It's you do a great job.
We're looking at like 15 different Halloween recommendations. So check it out. You want more deets on the events we just talked about? Subscribe. You'll get that email, and it's got lots of great stuff in it.
Awesome. Peyton, Aaron, Thad, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. I've been a long-time
listener.
Long-time
listener.
First time guest. Yes.
I made it.
This was so
fun. Hi, Mom.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were Paul Caroli and Aaron O'Toole. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter. I'm your host, Bree Davies. Our music is by Los Mocochetes, with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren, plus more from the Epidemic Sound Library. If you haven't already, subscribe and rate us 5 stars. Follow us on Twitter at CityCast Denver and tell a friend about us next time you see them. You can sign up for our daily newsletter by texting Denver to 66866 and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you later.